God does not judge a man until he is dead. So why then should I ever judge another? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. God does not judge a man until he is dead, so why then should I ever judge another? That's Old Testament talk, that God judges us when we're dead. He judges the quick and the dead. Oh, my. Very fascinating statements. Okay, so are you dead? I would say if you're listening to me, you're not. Are you alive? I would say if you're listening to me, you're alive. Are you wonderful? I would say if you're listening to me, you're wonderful. Are you fantastic, glorious, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? If you're listening to me, you are. So, why should I ever judge another? That is what the question boils down to. If you ever judge another, you are not an active, competent, confident student of the University of Healing. Because in the University of Healing, we teach and share that we do not judge anything, anybody, anywhere, anytime, anyhow, including, especially, ourselves. We do not judge another. It's another that we're judging when we judge ourselves, because it's not our real self that we're judging. We're judging the appearances that we might be experiencing for a moment or two. But hey, what is this all about? What is this all about? Why do we ever judge ourselves? We judge ourselves because of all of the... That's a point. I was going to write that down. I must do that right now while I'm thinking about it. Right here in the middle of this talk. Right here in the middle of this talk. Children are born pure and integral. The world teaches children to be limited, to judge, and to, I don't want to say the word hate, but be touched. Okay, now. We say we should return to our original purity and integrity. And we say, my God, where is my original purity and integrity? How far back do I have to go? How many dimensions and this and whatever do I have to go? Well, not far at all. Every child born into this world, or any world, is born absolutely perfect and absolutely complete, absolutely pure, absolutely magnificent. Every child, without a doubt. Now, if every child is born that way, when do they start getting mixed up? Well, they start getting mixed up when the children are playing in the sandbox and mother comes along and says, why are you letting him play with your toys? And so possession comes up. Now, bring your toys home when you're done playing. Put your toys away in the room. If you don't take care of your toys, we're not going to get you any more toys. If you're going to hurt your toys and bust them up and so forth, then that's the end of it. You're not going to have any more. Well, now, possession, judgment, you know. And so, now, here is my mommy. How can I get my mommy to do what I want her to do? And so you realize that if you put your clothes away, if you are an orderly child, then your mother will like you. If you do everything right, your mother will like you. If you are a good child, your mother will like you. False, 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 false. The mother spends more time with a child that doesn't behave than with a child that behaves. When a child doesn't behave, he gets attention. When a child doesn't behave, he gets the mother's love. He gets, now come on, you know how to do better than that. Now come on, come on. And he gets all, and the other kid, who would just love to have mother's love and mother's attention, is a very orderly and a very proper. And what are they given? They're just given the responsibility to look after the other kids who aren't doing the right things. But you see, they learn pretty quick. Even in being a good child, you learn that there is no benefit to it. And being a bad child, you get attention, but not necessarily all the attention that you want. But what does the original child do? What does the original baby coming out of the womb do? It is the master of its world. It wants what it wants, and it smiles and coos and gets it. It cries because it's unhappy. But the baby who coos with a pants full is the same as the baby who cries with a pants full. But the baby who coos with a pants full gets their pants changed faster because mama always wants to go see what the baby's cooing about. Why the baby is so happy, you know? And goes in, oh, time to change your pants. Oh, well, you're such a lovely love, you know? And the other kids cry, mama, I want my pants changed. Mama, mama, crying, screaming away. And mama's, well, they can never shut up. Oh, I'm going outside to mind, don't have you. And he wants to have his pants changed. But you see, he doesn't get it right away. So he screams and hollers. And he just feels, I have to bellow a lot to get anything done around here. Nobody pays attention to me. Well, you see, they move away, both the good and the bad. I don't mean good and bad, but I mean the ones who have to be loud and noisy and the quiet, gentle child. They move away from that because they don't always get what they want. What do you say of the child who coos gets his pants changed? Yes, but what he wants to learn to do is to have a certain regularity, you know. He doesn't want to have to sit with a pants full and wait while his mother comes up to him while he's cooing and doing these things. He wants to have a certain system about him where he is able to do it, you know, like he's getting his bath, and so then he empties. So he doesn't have to have a pants full. But then she got to change the bath water and all that good stuff. But whatever. But you see, children are born pure and integral. They are born so wholesome and so wonderful. They don't have judgments. They don't feel that they should do different things and that they should have different things, that they should attitude with different things. They don't feel that they should do that. That's not their problem. Now, what is the problem? Well, the problem is that parents teach the children ownership. They teach the children possession. They teach the children that only certain things are allowed. Johnny comes and borrows a toy, and then mother says, well, now, where is your toy? Well, Johnny has the car, and I have the truck. I traded Johnny for the truck. And so, but your car was worth $100 and the truck's only worth 10 cents, you know. Mom, I like the truck. But don't you, Mom, I like the truck. Well, your values are all off, boy, you know. Mom, I didn't like the car, but I like the truck. Because the truck can do all the things I want to do in the sandbox and the car couldn't. The car always had to be kept clean. It had to be kept nice. It had to have a nice road. The truck can go up and down the hills and do all these. Johnny, don't you understand? The truck was valuable. I mean, the car was valuable. The truck's not, you know. Mom, It's mine. All right. You see, and with exasperation, he gets these things, but his mother just doesn't understand. Because her set of values, her set of meaningfulness is different than the child. Now, little children soon get the adult values. They soon get the adult points of view. I always liked Marx's attitude. People would take his ideas that he has demonstrated to them and go and finish them further and sell them, you know? I'd say, Mark, they're selling your ideas. He says, that's okay. I got more where that came from. He said, I'm not concerned about that. When I take my idea and I develop it to the conclusion and I patent it, then that's fine. But if I haven't patented it and if I haven't done anything, if I have the light bulb in my mind and I tell everybody about it and then somebody takes it and makes it and gets credit for it, well, hey, that's their blessing. I should have done that too if that were important to me, but it wasn't important to me. So, you see, these are the wonderful things. These are the wonderful things about children, about a child, and even as they get older. Children are born pure and integral. So we say here, God does not judge a man until he's dead, so why should we judge another? Why should we teach our children to judge, you know? Now, why should we judge another? Why should we teach our children to judge? Why should we judge another? Why should we teach our children to judge? You see, it goes right down to the basics. It goes right down to the base. And so then we have a world filled with judgers, filled with people who are making decisions about what's right and wrong, instead of just flowing with it, and being one-pointed about what you want. Just being one-pointed. I was giving the illustration this morning about my brother, and he was very unhappy that his dog Tipper died. Well, Tipper was an old dog, and very old, in fact, and he just expired. And Ray just felt disenchanted. He was almost 80 years old, and he was just so unhappy. And so I went to visit him, as I often did and do, and I said, Ray, why are you so unhappy? Well, Tipper died. And I said, well, get yourself another dog. He said, they're so expensive, and they're this, and they're that. And I said, well, Sylvia told me about a neighbor that has a dog and wanted to get rid of it because they had only big dogs, and this little dog was sort of a bother, you know, and they didn't have time for it. And it's a little Jack Russell Terrier. I'll take it. Instantly, he said, I'll take it. You see, he didn't judge. He merely knew in his heart that he was ready for a new baby. He was ready for a new something to love. And so I called Sylvia and told her, and I said, would you mind driving up here right away? And that's a 2.5-hour drive, a 3-hour drive, all the way to Mount San Jacinto from Campo here. And Sylvia says, sure. You know, no question about it, sure. And so she got the dog from the neighbor, and the neighbor says, oh, good, he's going to have a home now. And Sylvia put the dog in a crate, you know, in the car, in a carrying cage for the dog. And the dog was okay. And then at one point, Sylvia took the dog out of the carrying cage and let the dog sit next to her on the seat. And the dog was so orderly, so mannerly, so gentle, so loving. So we said, just a minute. And so she got out of the car and put the cage in the trunk. And she let the puppy sit next to her all the time. And of course she fell in love with the dog. And so by the time she reached my brother's house, she was, you know, thinking, now maybe I should just turn around and go home and say he wasn't there or something, you know. But she realized that that was what her mission was. She went in with the dog, and the dog leaped from the floor or wherever he was right into Ray's lap. And now, over as many years, he hasn't left since. And he's happy as can be, and Ray says it's the most wonderful gift he could have ever had. But yet, he didn't know that that was going to make a difference in his life. He didn't know that that was going to be his refreshing point, his companion, his very great friend, you know. And here, what someone else didn't want, you know, turned out to be something very much wanted at the right place. Now, how did Ray know to tell me these things at just that moment? How did Ray know, and how did we happen to know? How did I happen to hear just the day before, virtually, from Sylvia about that dog, you know, and what have you? You see, when you work in divine order, when you work a divine pattern without judging, without saying, this is wrong, why they should not get rid of that poor little puppy, he belongs there. He doesn't belong anywhere. He belongs wherever he chooses to be, you know? And the dog was making the decision to leave that house, not the people. He was making the decision, and so he put in the people's minds the idea that they could release him without feeling missing him, you know? Because the dog had to make that decision. And then the dog had to carry out the decision further to see himself in a home where he is king, or she, or she is queen. And in Ray's house, she's the queen. She rules the roost. She does all the things she wants to do. In fact, she even went for a walk in the park with Ray. Ray was in his wheelchair, and she was on her long leash, the doggy leash that runs in and out. And they went by a bunch of ducks, and she decided she would have a duck. And she ran over and grabbed a duck by the throat. And my brother, who was unable to get out of the wheelchair and walk around quickly at all, he jumped out of his wheelchair, ran over there, separated her mouth from that duck, and said, no, no, no.
Run again.
And you see, the thing is, what a blessing he is for Ray, or she is for Ray, they will never know. And yet, if we were to judge that, we would say at first, it'll never work because that active dog is going to be too much for him. But it was just right. You see, we don't know these things. But what we do know is when we're not possessed, when we're one-pointed, when we open ourselves up to being untouched, then all the doorways open. And being that way is like a child. You see, this is how a child is, untouched. The child falls in love with the dog. The dog gets run over. The child says, oh, my baby. And then, let's get another one. Let's get another one. He is not possessed by that dog. The car runs over his truck. He says, let's get another one. He doesn't say, my truck, what'd you do to my truck? He just says, okay, you know. He's not a fatalist. He's just recognizing not being possessed. You see, these are all things that we can do too. And when we do that, then we too shall realize, as God doesn't judge ever really. So we should not judge ever really. And if we do not judge, starting with ourselves, and then going on to the world we created around us, if we don't judge it, we'll find that we'll be like little children, born pure and innocent, untouched, happy. You see, when a little child is born, they do not necessarily bond to their parents like many psychologists would like you to believe. If the mother dies and the child is given a new parent right away, a new mother or something like that, it's okay. The child's psyche is not terribly touched because he's not possessed. You understand? He is not possessed. And even up until several years of age, the child is not touched. It is only, I am your mother, I am your father, I am your sister, I am your brother, you are my child. You see, the world of possession doesn't take hold for a little while yet. And so if we could return to that attitude of little children, of non-possession, of non-judgmentalism, you know, of just being untouched and being one-pointed and following this we would be living in a world of unconditional love. And that's what a little child does. They live in a world of unconditional love. And this is the blessing that I would love to see each of you enjoy. Living in a world of unconditional love right now. So happy, so peaceful, so content. And ain't life grand? I think it is. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.